Accession number 29954, Reel 1.
Eric Sanders, Reel 1. We should start perhaps at the beginning, and I'll ask you the first question, which is when were you born, and where were you born?
I was born in Vienna. I was born on a very easy date. I always tell everybody, you can't forget this date, so you can't forget my birthday, 12/12/1919.
And can you describe your family circumstances at that time?
We actually were quite a poor family. My father was made to leave school very early, probably at the age of 13 in those days. His father was born in Hungary at a time when he was part of the Austrian Empire. Said he had to go and get out, get an apprenticeship and help start earning money. And so my father, when I was born, was employed in some type of egg. I don't know. Yeah, you can't talk about an egg workshop, but somewhere where they dealt with eggs, probably an egg importer or something like that, because his job and his speciality was holding the egg against a light, which was kept in a metal frame with a hole for the egg, to see whether the egg was all right. That was his speciality. He was an egg shiner. Yeah, it's a funny funny profession to have, but that was his only ability. He was a very hard worker all my life. He lost jobs several times and somehow managed to get jobs. We lived in a flat. We were poor. I never had any pocket money. If I needed something, if my parents had to give it to me for whatever. That's not to say that I never went to the cinema or anything, but it was. They had to be very careful with the money. I went to an ordinary. We lived in a district in which there were no rich people in Vienna. Then the 14th district. In a street which was called Reichsapfelgasse, which means the Empire's apple. It was imperial apple. Well, what's this thing that an emperor has?
Oh, the staff.
Yeah, so with a little. And that's what.
A mace.
Yes. Anything less than imperial, you could not imagine. It was a longish, narrow, grey street with grey houses, and we were up on the first floor, which is deceptive because there was a mezzanine floor. In other words, the first floor was really the second floor. And as all houses in Vienna, internally, on the inner side of the house, together with three other houses, there was a yard. And sometimes street singers and people came into that yard and performed there. I think they had to be allowed in because the front door was always locked. Every tenant had to have a key to get in and out of the house. And sometimes some of the people would throw coins down and sometimes they wouldn't. Our flat on our floor, there were, I believe, just two flats. As you came up the stairs, ours was on the right, and there was somebody else, another neighbor on the left. Each of our toilets was outside. So if you wanted to go to the toilet, you had to go outside. And we had no bathroom. I remember my mother bathing me every night in a lead basin. Well, as long as I was small enough to get into a lead basin, having to boil up the water and having to giving me my bath. How far shall I go with this?
That's nice, but yeah, this is perfect. Your father, did he see service in the First World War?
No. My mother came from an area which is, I believe, Ukraine or Poland today, or maybe bits of either. It was then known as the Bukovina. You may have heard this before somewhere. And as far as the story goes, my father saw her picture at some relation. She was somehow vaguely related to someone who was related to them, and he traveled all the way there and married her. I think she can only have been 18, if not younger. And she followed him to Vienna. I think to her he was the prince. Unfortunately, my father was no prince. He was a very nice man, but he was a poor man. He was not very well educated, although he was not an ignorant man. And what did you ask me there?
Did he see service in the First World War?
Oh yes, just before the First World War started, they had just got married, I think. They went to England to visit her sister here in London. One sister in particular looked very much like she. I don't think they were twins, but they were almost like twins. But quite a number of her Bukovina family. It was a large family, I don't know, 9, 10 children, and she had a stepfather by then. And the war broke out whilst they were in London. And the way my father puts it is that he missed the last train back to Austria to be called up. I wouldn't be too sure whether he wasn't only too happy to miss the last train, but that's, I don't say it in any judgmental way. Fact was that he was interned here. And my mother was not. She stayed with her sister, helped to bring up one of my cousins, who always looked at her as a second mother. My father was on the Isle of Man, and he was allowed to work on a farm as prisoner of war, but on a farm in Amersham.
Okay. Did he ever talk about his time?
Yes. Unfortunately, by the time I began to be really interested and decided I'll go and see him with a microphone when I was teaching, I kept postponing it, and then suddenly it was too late. He did talk from time to time. But I wasn't interested as a child. Children never are very much, are they? I don't know. I don't want to use other children as an excuse for what I wasn't interested in. But that's a fact. I don't know a lot about his life. I know some things. His mother, I presume it was his stepmother, lived with us. As you entered from the passage, as you entered our flat, opposite was a small room. In German, a small room is called a cabinet, which is why our cabinet is called a cabinet, because King George I always came and met his ministers in what he called the cabinet. That's true. George I couldn't speak English, and they couldn't speak German, so they spoke Latin, as far as I remember reading somewhere. Anyway, my grandmother lived there. She could hardly hear, and she had an ear trumpet into which people shouted. And I was too small to have much intercourse with her, but she was around there. I do remember one scene. Why, I don't know. I was just being put to bed. I must have been a tiny tot, and I was jumping up and down in bed and shouting at the top of my voice. And I remember my grandmother saying to my mother, "Oh, he's going to be a cantor one day." You know what a cantor is? It's a man who sings the prayers in a synagogue. you know, it's a sort of leader, song leader, please help yourself. And she was wrong, actually. I never became.
Did your mother work at any point?
As far as I know, she did not. She worked very hard. I mean, being a housewife and looking after one child, and later on the second child, was hard work. Especially in those days, you could not go and do your shopping for the week. You had to shop every day for certain things. When I became a bit older, I was sent across the road to buy a quarter of a liter of milk for the day's requirements. And things like that had to be bought regularly. You couldn't. There were no refrigerators. There was nothing like anything we had today. And I wasn't allowed to play out in the streets because you mustn't play with the street children. And I was taught not to hit back if anyone, because if you take no notice of them, then they'll leave you alone. Unfortunately, this was not a very good lesson. It took me 17 years before I learned to hit back. And, well, I went, my mother was very ambitious for me to be better educated than she and my father were. I must say that everybody loved my mother, and my father was liked, but my mother was specially loved. She was a lovely woman. She was good looking too.
How do you think she adjusts to living so far from where she?
I don't know. I don't think it can have been easy. If it had been what she may have hoped in the big city, becoming much better. Well, but she was probably better off than she would have been in staying in a Bukovina. But you wouldn't necessarily see it like that. I don't know. I suspect my mother was probably disappointed in many ways. Like most wives. My father was a good man. He did his best. And my mother ran the family. She ran him too, you might say, because he was very good-hearted. And
were they political anyway? Do you know, were you aware of what,
no.
what they thought?
No. Being Jewish in Vienna was being aware. I wasn't as a child, not for some years, but being aware that of very strong anti-Semitism. It was only since just before the war that Jews were had been given equal rights by the outgoing by Francis Joseph, the emperor. And there was a great deal of anti-Semitism. I just accepted when I came across it or heard of it or knew about it as being part of it. I only saw it as a religious thing. Vienna and Austria is a Catholic country. Vienna less than Austria, Vienna.
Can you remember when you first became aware of anti-Semitism in Vienna?
Of anti-Semitism? It depends on what you mean by being aware. I knew of it long before I had personal experience of it. My first two schools, which were the equivalent of a junior school and the equivalent of a secondary modern school, were in working class areas. And I don't think that there I had any sort of personal experiences. But when I was about 11, I believe, or maybe younger, somewhere I've got these exact dates, but I can't remember them now. My mother, I was very small. I had a lot of illnesses. Practically every disease you could think of for a child, except for scarlet fever, as far as I remember. My mother joking once about it. Mumps, diphtheria. I was a weakly child. I was small. Right until I was 17, I was always the smallest boy in the class and an easy butt for anti-Semitic children. And so personal experience did not actually come, direct personal experience did not come until I was about 13. But of course, when, because of my being so weak, and because for reasons of health, my mother enrolled my little brother and me in a Zionist kind of scouts organization. They weren't scouts, but they were like the scouts. In Austria, there were no youth clubs, that is, non-political organizations for children. There was no such thing. If you were Catholic, you were in a Catholic youth, or if you were in a socialist youth, you were a Red Falcon. So all youth organizations were somehow political, except for the scouts themselves. They also existed. But my cousin, who was 10 months older, that the son of my father's sister, who had married a rich man, well, I don't think he was all that rich, but for us he was a rich man, a very good man. He helped a lot of people in the family. He was the sort of senior of the whole of the family, large Jewish extended family, you know, everybody visiting everybody as a duty and keeping up relationships. When my cousin got enrolled in this Zionist organization, and for what it's worth, the name was Sereno, which means our youth. Again, amongst the Zionist youth organizations, as far as I know now, there were three different ones. One extreme left wing, one right wing, which later on became the Irgun, well, some of whom, and one social democratic, that's the one that my cousin and I were enrolled in. Well, once I was in there, I got to know a lot about anti-Semitism. And some of the things that my father had said, or my mother sometimes said, fell into place. And I began to understand that we were a persecuted race, or to believe. I can't put it any other way, because Zionism, which existed in order to have a Jewish state one day in Palestine, was very small. If it hadn't been for Hitler, not many people really wanted to. Even youngsters, I certainly never wanted to go to Palestine. But it was an organization which you felt at home, because all the other children were Jewish. Nobody biffed you or spat at you or made unpleasant remarks or called you pig of a Jew and whatever many things I have heard and have experienced later on when I went to a different kind of school where there were more lower middle class children and middle class children.
How old were you when you moved on to that school?
Well, my father had such difficulties in earning a living that when I was about, let me see, from 6 to 10, I was in this junior school, age 6. I was actually a bit too young. I was allowed to join it in the September of the year in which I became 6. So I was a quarter of a year before, as many children did. For many children, it was done the other way around. I wasn't supposed to be admitted until I was 6 plus. So 10, 12, yes. When I was 12, we moved from where we lived first, the street I mentioned, to a western district, a wealthier district called Hitting. Each district in Vienna had both a number and a name. This was the 13th district. Have you ever been in Vienna? You know there's a big park called Schönbrunn? Well, the western end of Schönbrunn, that's where Hitzing began. And that's where we lived. And they opened a shop. They bought or took over a shop, a delicatessen shop. They had never done anything like this before, but for some reason or other, my father had a diploma as a merchant diploma. I think he had already got it when they did this, and on the basis of that he was allowed to run the shop. And this shop was at an extreme end of the district, up a hill, almost countryside, and my life changed considerably. First of all, I went into another school, still a secondary modern school, for another 2 years. Secondly, we no longer went on holidays together in the summer. Until then, the norm for us, for our family, was that when the summer holidays came, my father would find some sort of inn in the countryside which let rooms. This was quite a normal thing for a lot of families, and my mother and we would take us two children there, and as soon as my father got his 2 weeks leave, or even 3 weeks, he joined us there. They had a wonderful system for employees in those days. Your entitlement to leave from work to a holiday grew with your length of service, and it didn't matter whether you moved to another business, whether you were employed by somebody else. If you were entitled to 3 weeks, you got 3 weeks. Eventually, it could come to four. It had a negative side, because of course some companies weren't keen to employ somebody who was entitled to a lot of holidays. But nevertheless, I do remember that there were times when later on, when my father was with us for a good 3 weeks. In fact, we were on the countryside when Dollfuss was murdered. But once they took over the shop, this finished. And during our summer holidays, my brother and I went part of the time, usually 2 weeks, to a summer camp with this Zionist organization. And the rest of it, we had a season ticket in a local swimming pool where we went every morning and came back every, at the end of the day, where we had our own little social life, which incidentally, from what I remember quite clearly, was mixed. It wasn't just Jews. We had very good relationships there in that swimming pool with the youngsters there. But once I finished my, at age 14, once I finished my secondary modern school, I was put into what would be the equivalent of a grammar school. In Austria in those days, they had three types of this. One was called the Realgymnasium. One was called the Gymnasium. That was the highest, where your main subjects were entirely academic, and you learned Latin and Greek. One was called a Realgymnasium, probably accent on realistic, I don't know, but where you learned one ordinary foreign language. It was somewhere between that and the next one, which was called a Realschule, which was probably nearest to some sort of a technical school here. Unfortunately, because I had such good marks, I was able to go into that school without any exam. Had there been an exam, I'm sure I would have failed, because I was not a good pupil. I only had good marks because it was so easy. The standards were so low in the secondary modern school. But I was quite happy there. I had very nice teachers, I remember. Well, I remember one or two. But once I started in that Realschule, I began to experience anti-Semitism daily. There were enough pupils there who found me an easy butt.
What sort of form did that take? What kind of
what form? Well, passing me a punch on my upper arm, which was, or knee on the thigh, or twisting, or say this or say that, don't say that. I was just a general butt, you know. I mean, children like, a lot of people like to to be able to humiliate someone, to humiliate another human being. And of course children are quite famous for that. We hear a lot about it now. They're trying to stop this victimizing. And in that sense, I was small, I was not very strong, I was a coward, I didn't dare to hit back, and so I was a convenient victim of anti-Semitic of pupils who felt anti-Semitic. Generally was that. I can't remember anyone just being a bully. If any of those who biffed me about was simply a bully, he hid it behind calling me a bloody Jew boy or something like that. I don't think there was a day in which I wasn't getting something. The advantage of that was I got so used to it, I took no notice, and I was very, very vivacious. I simply carried on. I carried on enjoying life, if you see what I mean. I just didn't enjoy it very much during break times, and it's hard to explain that, because it simply became the norm for me.
Did you take it personally? Huh? Did you take it? Did you treat it as a personal?
I just took it for granted. That was my life. That was life. But I did not understand that there was an ethnic side to this. I saw it merely as a different religion. You Jews have killed Jesus, and of course the Catholic Church was to blame for it quite a lot. Even the religious instruction teachers there, children would sometimes come out of their religious instructions and set about me. I was never, how shall I put it, I was never beaten badly. Simply because I didn't, I suppose if I had fought back, I might have been. And there was no custom of knocking people down as a crowd and then kicking them, which I experienced here when I became a teacher and watched what some children were doing. But all this has to do with what films they saw.
Eric Sanders, Real 2. I was going to ask you about your brother, whether you're aware of whether he suffered as well from a similar sort of persecution that you were.
I don't really know, but I don't think he did, because for a start, he only went to the junior school, that kind of junior school that I described, and the kind of secondary modern school. He missed a lot of. In other words, he did not go to the kind of school where there was an actual Nazi movement within amongst the teenagers, as there was in that lower kind of grammar school. It's not lower; it's just technical, and. He had asthma a lot, he was home a lot from school, but at some point or other he left this Zionist organization that I was a member of when we moved to Hitzing,